Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s and I used to live in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. Today I'm speaking to Nikki, a Catholic theologian who works at the London Jesuit Centre. Nikki is talking about her experience of trans inclusion in the church, both personally as a trans woman and as an academic. This conversation is a reminder of the importance of church being a place of community. So, Nikki, can you share a bit about your journey and what brought you into this work?
Yeah, so I stumbled into studying theology almost entirely by accident. I was originally applying to study philosophy, psychology and physiology at Oxford. And like many people who applied to get into Oxford, I didn't manage to do it. And I realised the kind of day before I had to send off the personal statement that the course was being pulled. And the thing which required the least changes to my personal statement was philosophy and theology. And I'd done a bit of like philosophy of religion when studying in college. So I swapped to that. And then I just fell in love with the subject. And over the years, I grew more and more enchanted with Christianity. And I ended up converting when I was a PhD student, then really deep into theology and doing PhD study. I guess the weird thing about that journey is that before I converted to Christianity, I also came out as trans. Like, I'm a trans woman. And my conversion was very much bound up in the kind of process of exploration that comes with transitioning. So I was doing these two kind of projects of exploration at the same time, one about transness and one much more like formal project with a PhD at the end about theology. And the two ended up inflecting one another, as these things always do when you're doing a PhD study. And after finishing my PhD, which was on Pope Francis, I realised that I wanted to actually focus on researching trans stuff and using the lessons I'd learned from Pope Francis to think about those things. So that's kind of how I ended up where I am now.
And what has been your experience as a trans woman in the church?
So it's been an ambivalent one, I think. In many respects, actually, Catholicism's been really like hospitable to me. I think I'm in a weird position of coming to it as an adult convert, so without bad prior experiences of, or at least direct experiences of Catholicism to put me off. I converted in the context of the University of Durham's Theology and Religion Department, which is a very warm and nurturing and hospitable place. And I came to Catholicism having already got a master's in Catholic studies and was studying a PhD in theology. So religion has always been something, or Catholicism, in fact, has always been something that's been quite empowering to me. And I realised that that's definitely not the case for most kind of trans people. And then I came to work here at the Jesuit Centre, and I'm involved in the Farm Street community, which is also very friendly and nurturing and things like that. So I've kind of came into the church within a niche and then moved into another niche, which has always been relatively comfortable. But that's obviously not the experience for everybody. And I've had a couple of bad experiences or whatever, but for the most part, my experience has actually been pretty good.
It sounds like you've had opportunities to flourish in the church. But what, from your research, what do trans people need in order to flourish in the church?
Right. So I think actually the successes of my stories firstly, it's a sign of what trans people need. Like, I wouldn't have been able to persist with being a Catholic had I not had those things. So one of the things that's really brought home to me is the importance of things like community and having a place. Catholicism, it talks about the fact that the church is a communion. And one of the things that that means is that your spiritual life is lived out in community and it's enriched by the people around you who, you know, you share in the Eucharist with and stuff. You're bonded to in a very kind of primordial and intimate way. So that's pretty important. And my experience of meeting trans Christians and queer Christians in general is that their ability to be Christians is generally very dependent on their ability to have a place in a Christian community. that might not be a particularly straightforward place. It might not be the most comfortable place in the world, but people find like a livable niche within whatever church they belong to. On the other hand, this is not an entirely straightforward thing, right? I mean, I'm sure all of you listeners can think of many different kinds of things that might be obstacles to trans people joining. And to an extent, like, you almost don't need to talk about them. Everyone knows, you know, you mustn't be discriminated against, you mustn't be kicked out of your community. You've got to have a chance to live your faith without thinking about how being queer is an obstacle to it. You've got to be able to live your faith without being consumed by doubts and guilts and uncertainties, and have the mental space to kind of focus on the positive things, like your love for God, your love for the people around you, your sense of God's love for you, that sort of thing. What interests me about this is the slightly less obvious stuff. So many of these things, there are lots of questions attached to them. So what does it mean to have a community that doesn't discriminate against you? What does it mean to have a place in a community that's comfortable? What does it mean for the church to be able to think about you in a way that enables it to provide these things? And that's really what I kind of focus on in my work.
So what do people often misunderstand about trans identity?
Right. So I think in Catholicism, at least, the main kind of problematic misunderstanding, the thing which I think really shapes the challenge that trans people face in the church, is the fact that the church views transness is that it does so on the basis of a very long history of reacting against things that it sees as a threat, things to do with the modern world that it interprets in a very specific way. So if you go back to the 19th century, you'll find in popes like Leo XIII, they see the modern world as characterized by what they call as license. So this is a view of human freedom as not being directed towards God or towards the order that God creates the world to conform to. And you can see this view present in the way that the church thinks about transness today as well. So if you look at the recent document from 2024 that came from what's known as the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith, that's the bit of the Vatican that decides doctrinal issues, resolves doctrinal disputes. It views transness as a matter of people wanting to take the body that God has given them, take how their body is ordered, like physically organized, and they want to exercise their freedom over their bodies, changing their bodies without regard to the kind of order that God created in the world. It's fundamentally the same sort of narrative, and it reduces transness to people just wanting to exercise their freedom or exercise their power over their body, over nature. But this misses something really important about the way that trans people experience being trans, and also even about the way that people think about transness. I don't think I've ever met a trans person who just sees their transitioning as a matter of them thinking their body is just some thing that they can do whatever they want with. He just sees it as like an arbitrary exercise of their will or of indulging of their like arbitrary desires. Often people experience transness as an encounter with something transcendent of them, something deep and true and powerful. This is certainly the case for me. And this is, in fact, one of the reasons why my discovery of an exploration of Catholicism could happen alongside my discovery and exploration of transness. In a certain sense, they felt like the same sort of thing. And also then when you look at the way that people talk about transness in trans studies, again, this theme of some sort of transcendence keeps kind of cropping up. This might not be a straightforward idea that there's something divine or like godlike that's being encountered in transness, but often people talk about there being a kind of mysterious nature which defies our ability to capture it in the language of sex and gender that society provides us with. And they see transness as this nature kind of pushing past those boundaries and creating forms of life that then can't be recognized by the society that's shaped by these ideas of sex and gender. So based on this kind of interpretation, the church is then not really able to think through transness in a way that does justice to the way that trans people themselves are thinking about transness. And this is a problem because, firstly, it the whole approach is a very conflictual one. It approaches transness as the newest face of this like great enemy that's threatened the church since like the 19th century and before. But on the other hand, it also means that the church fails to recognize points of contact between Catholicism and how trans people experience their lives. This is a pastoral problem, right? It's a pastoral problem for theologians. Theologians need, and church leaders need to learn to step out of this fearful and reactive and defensive mindset and enable themselves to become open to the sorts of good surprises that are presented in things that might seem strange and might even seem threatening, but then also have these hidden dimensions that can be genuinely fulfilling and genuinely hopeful. And that's kind of what I'm all about as a theologian.
Yeah. So what do you mean by transcendence?
Right. So this is like a theology word. Theologians talk about two kind of opposing principles, or not opposing principles, but sort of like opposite principles. There's immanence and transcendence. Immanence is what's kind of internal to human experience or human knowledge or perhaps creation. All the stuff that, you know, makes up the everyday world around us, makes up parts of human life. And then transcendence is the stuff that is in excess of or beyond or greater than or above this. So God, grace, those sorts of things are all transcendent. So a major feature of Catholicism is the idea that transcendence can be encountered within immanence. So the sacraments are worldly things, you know, little biscuits and bits of wine, or worldly rituals and elements and words and things like that, all of which are sites of encounter with the transcendent. So transcendence is incredibly important to Catholicism. And, you know, central to that is that human life is fundamentally about and shaped by and even created for an encounter with transcendence, kind of within our immanence. And this I think, is what's important then about thinking about transness. Trans people do not account for their encounter with transcendence in terms that might immediately be recognizable to your everyday Catholic, your everyday church leader. They won't necessarily talk about God or the divine or grace or anything like that. But they might still talk about the idea that the world defies reduction to the everyday terms around sex and gender that we think with. They might talk about a certain mysteriousness that the world has, our human inability to fully grasp the world, our ability to continuously be surprised by the world, or for the world to resist our best attempts to lock it down to something within our power. So there's something there which might be equivalent to transcendence in the sense that it's talking about the world, what Catholics might say is creation, as having a part that refuses to be reduced to what we normally think of in terms of immanence, human reason, human power, that sort of thing.
So you spoke before about Pope Leo XIII's view on people and society, but how has the church's approach to trans people changed over time? Is it different to that view now? How many years later?
So, I mean, Leo wasn't really thinking about trans people or even queer people in general. There's a long and complicated history of what gets called queerness or like trans stuff or whatever in, you know, Western history even. There are various social phenomena that have come about that resemble what we would know as like gay life or trans life or whatever today. But the way in which we think about transness now is very much shaped by 20th century medicine. Basically, the kinds of ideas of transness that you probably have now. So transness as a medical problem, transness is about a mismatch between how someone thinks or feels about themselves and the way that their body is. Transness is involving accessing certain kinds of medical treatments. All of these sorts of ways of thinking about transness, what's known as like the medical model of transness, came about in this time. And it was during this time then that the church began to think about transness as well. So the first kind of reflections on transness were to do with bioethical questions. Is gender change surgeries or whatever morally licit, as moral theologians would say? Are you allowed to do it? Is it moral to do it? Also questions about whether people who've changed gender or changed sex or whatever could play like sex-restricted roles in the church. So could female to male transsexual, which is the language that people were using at the time, people don't really use that word anymore. People were asking whether a female to male transsexual could be a priest, or whether trans people who'd had gender change surgery could get married and what roles they could get married in. Generally, the response to all of those questions was no. And to be honest, actually, views on that haven't really changed that much. What has really changed is, firstly, it's become more closely linked to this idea of license, to this idea of a misuse of human freedom. And it's done this through becoming associated with feminism, which also is seen as challenging gender roles and challenging ideas of sex and things like that. So the two kind of were naturally folded into one another. But then also there's been a development in how the church thinks about its pastoral responsibilities towards people. So over time, we've seen a much more, what people often just refer to as pastoral, but what they really mean as maybe a bit more sensitive or delicate or perhaps even caring approach to dealing with the people who, you know, populate our churches, who church leaders might have pastoral responsibility for. And this has meant that in recent years, we've seen a very sincere, I think, actually, and very concerted attempt to get people to be nice to trans people, regardless of what they actually think about transness. And this is actually one of the major changes, I think, that's made it much more possible to be a trans Catholic in the first place. I mentioned earlier that one of the things that trans people need is a community that they can exist in without constantly encountering hostility and without constantly being confronted with their transness as an obstacle to being a Catholic, and can be allowed the mental space to do all the good stuff about Catholicism, like love God and feel God's love. It's created that kind of possibility through having this much more caring and delicate pastoral approach that doesn't just see that someone doesn't kind of fit the mold of what maybe even most people, or at least a lot of church leaders, think Catholicism should look like, and then beat them over the head with it.
Question was going to be, are there Catholics who have been supportive of inclusion? And you've kind of started to talk about that, but I guess the question is, like, the way you've said about the church changing and people have changed their view to be more pastoral is part of that question, but at the same time, are people just doing it because that's what they're being told they should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced any Catholic really does anything because they've been told that they're meant to do it. I think that people do things for a whole variety of different reasons. And maybe some people are these incredibly responsive, meek kind of people who are mostly motivated by obedience. But I actually think that most people are thinking for themselves, and even people who just respond to what they're being told. But in this respect, I think that a lot of the openness to trans people, and indeed queerness in general, that we're seeing in contemporary Catholicism, especially in places like the UK and Europe and things, I think that this is emerging from general changes in cultures in those countries. People have come to understand these things as holding stuff that's genuinely good, or at least seeing that previous attitudes towards these sorts of things, so attitudes which said that you have to discipline queerness or discipline transness, police it, stop it from existing or being expressed in society. People have started to see that that sort of thing is generally not conducive to having a good society. It leads to lots of violence. It leads to social marginalization. It leads to exclusion and all the kind of material stuff associated with that, like poverty and bad health outcomes and things like that. What we have seen, though, particularly in the papacy of Pope Francis, in fact, I say that Pope Francis was like a real watershed moment for this. What Francis did was he really emphasized the importance of this more, you know, what people would say is a pastoral approach, this more kind of caring pastoral approach. And he, I think, legitimated it by performing it. He exhibited it in his own pastoral style. He appointed people who also exhibited it to positions of authority. He was very careful to do this stuff in ways that people would see and potentially identify with themselves. He made it seem like a possibility for Catholicism, and he kind of baptized it by doing it at the highest level of authority within the church. There have always been people who have done this in the church, but Francis was particularly special in that he did this from the position of being the Pope and in a way that was genuinely inspiring.
So what brings you hope now that we're in a different papacy?
Yeah, I mean, partly, I guess we don't really know that much about Leo. So he's not done anything to shatter my hope. I think my main hope actually, though, or the main source of my hope really lies with the fact that, you know, as Pope Francis once again taught, it's not us that brings these hopeful processes to fruition. You know, we encounter God working in the world in these encounters with transcendence within our kind of human experience. So it's slightly out of our hands. And this means that we then don't have to worry so much about human failure either. God's quite famously turns failure and evil to good. So in a sense, then, this does give me something genuine and powerful and unfailing to put my hope in. And that's kind of also the basis of a lot of elements of my faith. Obviously, this doesn't mean that if you focus now on like a more kind of concrete or specific level, that doesn't mean that everything that could go wrong is going to actually go right in the end. Hoping in God is a very big picture hope, but it says very little about what's going to happen the next day or in the next couple of months or with the next bit of legislation or whatever. In this context, my hope really resides much more in the fundamental goodness and resiliency that I find in people around me. Like, we live in a really scary time. Just look at basically anything. Like, pick whatever headline scares you most. And that is the time that we're living in. And I can't obviously say that everything's going to be all right or work out perfectly. And not everyone is going to make it through these things. Not everyone is making it through these things. But equally, I think that there's a kind of fundamental goodness and resilience to the human spirit, which is never completely crushed with this sort of thing.
So what has been your experience of being part of a Catholic community? And how do ordinary Catholics create that safer, welcoming community for others?
Yeah. So like I said, my experience with Catholicism has actually been very nice and like hospitable. And I've always found like a niche that I can occupy. And I think that actually the one thing that's actually no, there are two things which have made Catholicism so hospitable to me. The first thing, and this is something that you should be able to get in any Catholic community, is like for people to just be normal towards you, like treat you like a normal person and let you be a normal person yourself and just interact with you like they'd interact with any other person without like making a big deal of everything. And this can be, you know, in a negative way where you encounter someone who's like transphobic. Or it can also be in a slightly positive way where, you know, you get the well-meaning person who's super overbearing and just makes everything like super awkward. And obviously, when you're encountering someone who's different to yourself, it's difficult to be normal because it puts you out of sorts and it can be something that you're not used to navigating. But honestly, just talking to someone like a regular person and letting them talk to you like a regular person and letting you be a part of a community without raising issues about it or whatever, like that is 100% just the best way to make a safe and nurturing community. Where this becomes harder is where, you know, you run up against the real sticking issues. Stuff like, what toilets do you let someone use? Do you let them use the toilets that, you know, matches the gender in which they're living as? Or do you segregate them away into like the disabled toilet or something like that? Also, in terms of like participation in the sacramental life of the church. And, you know, the question of who can get married in Catholicism is a really complex one that touches on questions of how the church thinks about fertility and things like that. And it's probably too much to like go into here. But like there will always be points that are really difficult. And there are always aspects of Catholicism that produce aspects of community life that end up being hostile or alienating. I don't think that that can ever be overcome unless Catholicism changes drastically. And, you know, the church is a living tradition and its beliefs and practices evolve and develop. But then also the church isn't free to just change what it believes based on things like convenience or even, you know, its best intentions to be hospitable to people. These issues are just kind of more complicated than that. And I don't pretend to have any solution to any of them. That's like outside of my pay grade. But I guess the other thing, though, is giving trans Catholics and indeed all forms of queer Catholic space to be both queer and trans and Catholic. So, you know, being normal might mean not considering those sorts of things or like making those sorts of things a big deal. But then we also need to be able to make a big deal of these things among ourselves and to do so freely and to have space to explore them and talk about how they really matter to us and how they really shape our experience. And being able to provide space for that. Communities like we have here at Farm Street, like LGBT Catholics Westminster, where you can encounter other queer Catholics and share these really deep and important things, that's incredibly valuable too. Like, one of the kind of hostile narratives you get around queer Catholicism is this idea that you're a Catholic as a person. Descriptors like being queer or whatever are, you know, secondary to all of that. And that's sort of true. But where it's not true is where that's just a way of saying, so like, don't talk about it or don't identify with your queerness. People who say that rarely have a problem with people talking about their national identity. So they talk about, oh yeah, I'm an English Catholic or I'm an Irish Catholic or whatever, because they recognize that, you know, nations are not something that God created. Like, God did not create England. God did not create France as it exists today or whatever. These are stuff that humans have created. They're about our history. They're about our experience in society. They're about the way that we relate to other people through culture and all of that sort of thing. But they're super important because they do shape the way that we experience the world and they experience our faith. You know, if you're a Catholic from Nigeria, the nature of your Catholicism is going to be very different from your Catholicism as like an English Catholic, because it would have been shaped by your culture and your history in really profound ways. And way to get people to try and do Catholicism without engaging with that sort of stuff, you'd actually be asking them to have a very impoverished kind of faith. The same goes for queer people. So it's important that people can have a space where they can do that and then also have that space not be a source of like policing or discipline. You mustn't have someone who then comes in and says, you can be a queer Catholic, but you can only be a queer Catholic or think about yourself as a queer Catholic or explore that in this one particular way and everything else is legitimate. Like, you've got to give people freedom to explore those aspects of their lives because that's the bit of their life in which they encounter God. And if they're going to recognize that encounter, they need to be able to like look for where God is arising in that. So those spaces are also incredibly vital.
So are there ways people can get more involved or learn more?
Yeah. So I'm really lucky in that I have a job that also lets me do teaching and to share the stuff that I love and find life-giving and powerful and fruitful and nourishing with basically anyone who wants to come along. The Jesuit Center does teaching on a ton of different things. In fact, we've got three streams. We've got a spirituality stream. We've got a kind of straight down the line sort of theology stream where you'd learn about, you know, Christology, the study of Christ, or doctrine of creation, or that sort of thing. And then we have my stuff, which is social and environmental justice. So I get to teach on topics that touch on how faith and ethics and stuff like that work within our society. If you're particularly interested in trans stuff, I am in fact running a course on trans theology later on in this year. It's going to be a fairly introductory course. You might have to read some stuff that can be a bit difficult, but the purpose of the course is to kind of guide you through those sorts of things and give you space to explore this stuff in a way that like gets to draw on the best of people's thinking and insight within the context of academic theology. And by exploring it together, we can kind of gather the fruits of that activity and hopefully glean something from it. And as a teacher, I also then get to learn from all the students who come along. And in March, we're having an open day. So if you're not quite there in terms of committing to a whole course, They tend to be 5 weeks, one day a week, or one evening a week. But if you want to kind of dip your toe in a bit more hesitantly, we have an open day coming up in March where we'll have taster sessions on a variety of different topics. You can meet some of the other people who are interested in the Jesuit Center and maybe make some friends. You can meet me and the other tutors here. It's going to be really good. It's the first time we've done it, so we're going to be going all out for it. So it'd be lovely to see you there.
So what do you wish you knew about trans inclusion in the church?
It's hard to say what I wish I knew because the process of discovery itself has been so amazing for me. I think maybe what I wish I knew is like how amazing this whole thing was going to be. You know, I came to Catholicism as an adult. I transitioned as an adult, which is a really common thing. And when I embarked on both of these courses, I did so with a great amount of anxiety and a great amount of fear and in a great amount of uncertainty. And it was really difficult to get myself into a headspace where I had the kind of, I guess, strength to persist with it. I'm not naturally a person who, or at least before this, I was not naturally a person who'd stick my head above the parapet. I was not someone who's confident in myself or in my opinions. I was very deferential to authority in a way that wasn't necessarily based in a good view of authority, that sort of thing. Often against my own better impulses. And part of my process of growth through all of this has been unlearning that stuff and learning to have hope and learning to have faith and in both God and like myself where it's justified. And the thing that I really wish I knew or known at that point then was really that this was going to genuinely be something that was wonderful and nourishing and transformative and powerful. Because to begin with, I was just so afraid. But it's not, those fears have not been borne out. And the more that I journey into both Catholicism and transness, the more exciting and rich and beautiful it becomes. So I wish I'd kind of known that to begin with.
And finally, what are you grateful for?
I think I'm grateful for not only the chance to do this exploration, but then the chance to share this exploration with other people. I think that the things that we do in community or engaging with other people are immeasurably more valuable than the things that you do on your own. And, you know, there's a model of academic life where you just study something that's only of interest to you and, you know, five other people or whatever. But I've stumbled into a life where I get to reflect on something that matters to a whole great deal of people. And this is genuinely wonderful. And it makes my life feel much more valuable than if I'd just been, you know, I know, doing something arcane and relatively more insignificant. And it's given me the opportunity to learn from loads of different people and really kind of gain from the genuine wisdom and virtue that I've encountered in the other people who are invested in this stuff. And I myself have then, I think, become a better person because of it and because of the other people that I've encountered. So that's really what I'm grateful for, I think.
Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this conversation is going to stay with me because Nikki speaks of her own experience as a Catholic trans woman has mostly been a positive experience. It's really great to hear when community is done well. How about you? We love to hear how Nikki's story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. You can find out more about this and other themes at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.